Thanks a million, Shane.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Wash your hands.
Good afternoon, everybody. Hope you are well and safe and that you had a lovely bank holiday weekend. Tuesday after the bank holiday, I always think it's a bit of a slow burner, isn't it? I mean, it takes a while to get the cogs turning over again. We just about got the bin out this morning. Just about. It almost got us. But the week was righted. We got it out before the bin lorry turned up. Anyway, here we are. Hope you're in good spirits wherever you are. And sure, if you're not, it'll be Friday before we know it, lads. And you know what? On that note, there's been a lot of chat recently about the potential of a 4-day working week here in Ireland. And there's an official group promoting the campaign for change. And earlier this month, the Oireachtas Committee on Enterprise, Trade and Employment said they were going to include it for discussion in their draft programme. And even I was just chatting about it with the lads upstairs. Even when you just take the commuting time alone out of it for people, because so many more people are working from home now, it does make sense. 2/3 of people surveyed, including employers, gave the idea of a 4-day week the thumbs up. I'd be all for it. I doubt there's many people who wouldn't be up for it. But the only problem I see, right, is that if you were to take either the Friday or the Monday off, because what's the point in taking a midday week off? You see, then you'd have to be very careful about your weekends, because, you know, the bank holiday weekend, you have a 3-night weekend with the glass of vino or the takeaway, and you kind of let yourself go a little bit. So I think we need to be a bit mindful of that. But anyway, let me know what you think. 51551. Or ray@rte.ie. What would be the best thing for you going from a 5-day to a 4-day week? One thing we're hearing about 7 days a week. I was listening to Joe there before we came on at the American election. There is little more than a week to go, and it kind of has come around like that, hasn't it? Joe Biden has been rallying the celebrity troops, and last Sunday night's I Will Vote virtual concert included John Legend, Pink, and the one and only goddess of pop, Cher, who was loud and proud in her support for Joe. She even serenaded him. So what she did was she adapted the 1943 Harold Arlen song, Happiness is a Thing Called Joe. I thought she sounded deadly. Have a listen.
It seems like happiness is just a thing called Joe. He's got a smile that makes the lilacs wanna grow. He's got a way that makes the angels heave a sigh when they know Preston Joe's passing by.
She's a great set of pipes still, doesn't she? Cher. Now, she could be auto-tuned to beat the band, I've no idea. But do you know what age she is? Cher is 74 years of age. And of course, Joe Biden is 77. And I'd imagine has had far less surgery than her. But still, the two of them, great advocates for getting out and living life in your 70s. So love listening to that this morning. Now, lots of us are doing different things to try and pass our time during lockdown, whether it's cooking or reading. Speaking of cooking, actually, I was laughing. Donal Skean, his Instagram stories over the weekend were hilarious because he sent the entire country into a lamb shank frenzy. So his TV show was on the telly on Thursday or Friday, whatever night it was. And on his TV show, he was making a lamb shank shepherd's pie. Well, the country ran. Every butcher in Ireland, it seemed, ran out of lamb shanks. The lamb shank shortage caused a lamb shank shambles. Butchers were wondering what in the hell was going on until people started telling them that it was Donal's lamb shank shepherd's pie. And of course, now, since reading all about it, all I want to eat is lamb shank shepherd's pie. But anyway, lots of people doing, cooking, keeping themselves busy, baking. I'm doing a dance a day. That's the one thing that's keeping me cheerful. I read the Irish Times article a couple of weeks ago. Did you see that? The 75 things that keep us cheerful. And I decided, what is the one thing? So I said, I'm going to give it an old bop every day, put on a song, dance around the kitchen. I'm telling you, lads, it is medicine for the soul. Reading is another thing that people are doing. And do you remember the band E17? Remember them? They were brilliant. Tony Mortimer, one of the lads in the band, admitted back in May that he'd never read a book and never read a book in his life. He'd read his, so he started his first novel. And in just over a month, he had read 29 books. Isn't that incredible? And he's hooked now, and he's talking about trying to write his own novel, and possibly that's what he might try and do. But I just thought it was lovely to take something like that and really focus your time and focus your energy. And I'd love to know what books have kept you sane, what have made you laugh. Let's try and keep it Irish. I'm currently at the moment reading Louise O'Neill's book After the Silence. It's definitely not a laugh a minute, definitely not that. It's dark and it's grisly and it's all about murder, and perfect for this time of year, I have to say. So let me know your book of lockdown, 51551 or ray@rte.ie. Now, Halloween night is this Saturday, which is great for the kids. And look, we're all going to have to try and improvise with no trick-or-treating. But never as much fun for dogs, who can get pretty freaked out by the fireworks, which have been banging away for weeks now. But a dog's hearing is about four times as sensitive, I didn't know this, as ours. So fireworks can be really stressful for them. And the Dogs Trust have received an alarming, this is in the papers today, 350% spike in dog owners asking how they could help their pets who are freaking out with all the fireworks. So they put together a list of tips and tricks. They are on their website, dogstrust.ie, but I'll just give you a few of them here. And they suggest trying to settle your dog before the fireworks start, because if your dog is in familiar, safe surroundings, that will help them cope with the noise. Also, maybe think about providing a safe hiding place at noisy times around Halloween. So if they have their favourite room, or they, you know, go under a table, they also suggest, it's a great idea, putting a blanket or a duvet or something to make them a little more cosy. Close the curtains, keep on all the lights, lash up the volume on the TV or the radio to drown out the fireworks. That's a good one as well. And then also make sure that the house and the garden are secure during the fireworks. So stop the dogs doing a legger, because if a door opens, that's a big one that they could just, the fear could make them run. And they also suggest microchip details, make sure they're up to date in case they do manage to get out. But anyway, if you are concerned, if your dog is acting a little bit stressed, go on the website, and there's lots more tips and hints there as well. And also, staying with doggies for a moment, if you are living in Kildare and you walk your dog in the Curra, and let's face it, we're all doing our 5K distances now. There is an appeal out if you do live locally there to keep your dog on a lead, because this time of the year, 5,000 golden plover birds, they've just flown in from Iceland. They're a protected species. They've come here to chill their boots, lads. They've come from Iceland. They like the climate. They like living here. They don't want to talk about COVID. They don't want to talk about anything. They just want to relax. And so the guys in the Curra have asked to keep your dogs on the leads there, just to ensure that we don't freak them out. They've put up signs there, but just to be mindful of that as well. Okay, it is time for our quiz of the day. Yes, I was listening into this all last week. Great bit of crack. Today's prize comes courtesy of our friends at Farnham Estate in Cavan, and you and your guest can enjoy a two-night stay in a stylish guest room with breakfast each morning and dinner for two in Maxwell's Grill Room. You see, it doesn't matter how much cooking you're doing at the moment. Who doesn't want dinner served up to them? That sounds lovely. And the Farnham Estate, it's a magnificent estate, 1,300 acres of lovely woods and lakes to explore, less than 90 minutes from Dublin. And listen, you don't have to, we're not talking about getting there now, it's when lockdown is over. It doesn't matter where you're from, you can go and visit the Farnham Estate, and their website is farnhamestate.ie. So if you want to be in with a chance to win that prize, you have got to answer this question and come on air with me after 4 o'clock, Dave. I think it's after 4 o'clock. So the question to get on is, who played Michael Collins in the 1996 film of the same name? Who played Michael Collins in the 1996 film of the same name? So if you want to be in it to win it, 1850 715 900, that's 1850 715 900. We're going to get two people on the air and have a bit of crack, and you never know, could be in for to win that beautiful weekend away. Lots of texts coming in here. We were chatting about the 4 day week. I'm on a 4 day week for the past 11 years. I take Fridays off and it's absolutely great. I recommend it. I would love a 4 day week, Catherine. Would we still get the same pay? there you go. That's what they're saying, that you would. It's just about working smarter, I suppose. Catherine, I have every Wednesday off. I love it. You never work more than 2 days in a row. You see, yeah, I think that would be me now. I'd go for that option as well. Even though at the beginning I said, you know, what's the point, you know, Monday to Friday. But it would keep structure in your week, wouldn't it? I definitely no to a 4 day working week. If anything, it should be increased to 6, at the very least 5.5. Oh, no, go back to bed, whoever you are. A 6 day week. I'm a painter and work 6 days a week, sometimes 7. Couldn't go back to working 4 days a week. So you'd get nothing done. Ah, lads. The Shawshank Redemption. Aaron, that is my favourite line of the day. The Shawshank Redemption. Brilliant. Love it. Keep them coming in. 51551 or ray@rte.ie. OK, let's get some music. And this, of course, had to be one that I can have a bop to. This is a great tune. It is the brilliant Irish band Wild Youth, Can't Move On. That is Wild Youth. I absolutely love them. Love that song. And I was actually having a little bop around the place there while that was on. Aaron had texted in the Lamb Shank Redemption, which I just literally saw as the Shawshank Redemption, but absolutely brilliant. Love that. And speaking of Donal, Catherine, the mashed potato that Donal did and that he made was absolutely delicious. Cream, butter, yolk of an egg. I made it twice this weekend, says Dee. I'll have to give that one a go as well. You are sending in your books as well. I'm reading Dirty Little Secrets by Jo Spain. It's so good. Saw another one of hers in the Circle K garage that I have my eye on too. Love the show. Thanks for that. Most definitely Standing in Gaps by Seamus O'Rourke. Something for every emotion and every person of every age. That comes in from Ailish. Thanks a million, Ailish. Somebody asking, does the 4 day week extend to teachers? Farmers work 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year with no day off. And then books, again, I would highly recommend as a light reading during lockdown, the option of Once Upon a Time by Anton Deck. There you go. Thanks a million for that, Bernie. Brilliant. OK, keep them coming in. 51551 or ray@rte.ie. Back after this.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, welcome back. Over the weekend, we spotted an Instagram page that is really taken off. It's called the Pen Pal Project Ireland, and it is an absolutely gorgeous idea. Essentially, what they want to do is help people find pen pals in Irish nursing home, Irish nursing homes. The page is run by Stacey Fiat in Kildare, and Stacey is on the line. How are you doing, Stacey?
Hi, how are you?
I'm grand, not a bothering you.
Good, good, thank you.
Good, brilliant idea, I have to say. So simple, but so gorgeous and so lovely and so personal. So what made you think about setting up the page in the first place?
Well, it was actually an article I saw on Facebook a few weeks ago from a nursing home in County Down who started a pen pal initiative in their nursing home. And I remember seeing the smiles on their faces and it just really warmed my heart. So I knew I wanted to get involved somehow. I reached out to Alone Ireland to see if there had been any initiatives in Ireland like that, and there hadn't. So I decided to start my own, especially now with the challenging time, especially with the elderly who can't visit their family.
Yeah.
So I think it was just really nice to brighten their day and give them something to look forward to.
And it's lovely because, I mean, your own background is in weddings and obviously things are pretty quiet for you at the moment. So helpful for you as well to, I suppose, focus on something positive.
Exactly. Yeah, no, we had a nearly fully booked year this year, but we're left with a handful of weddings because of COVID. So I wanted to focus my time on something that I know would be very rewarding, and now that I have the time to do so as well.
Oh, I think we've lost Stacey there. Stacey, hi, you're back there.
Yeah,
sorry, hon.
just now that I have the time to do so, and especially it's so rewarding.
Absolutely. Well, come here, the reaction has been overwhelming. You have 10,000 followers on Instagram in less than 10 days.
It was actually 4 days we got 10,000.
Really?
I know. So we've actually got 8,000 people signed up already. And I think after 4,000 messages, originally we asked people to sign up just through our Instagram messages. I didn't expect to get the response that it did. But after 4,000 messages, Instagram actually restricted our account.
They thought you were spam.
Must have, yeah. So my friend Andrea actually put a form up on my website to allow people to sign up there.
And sorry, who is going through these 4,000 direct messages? Is that you trying to answer all of these?
It was just incredibly difficult. What I done was I kind of filtered through them to see if any of them were from nursing homes first, because the interest was growing and I didn't have enough nursing homes involved to pair everyone up. So I was trying to respond to the nursing homes first.
I get you.
It's been a crazy few days, to say the least.
Okay, so what are the rules? Obviously, when you're sitting down and you're thinking about this and how it works and looking at what happened, you know, the nursing home in Donegal or that you were, was it in Donegal or up the north?
County Down. Yeah.
So what are the rules? Because there have to be rules around COVID for one. And then just, in terms of what people talk about and how much information they give away and all that.
In terms of COVID, we've asked people to seal the letter with sellotape as opposed to licking the letter.
Yep.
A nursing home I was in touch with actually reached out to Netit to see if there was any kind of precautions they should take. So they said by the time the person sends the letter and the resident receives the letter, it's passed enough time. But that if anything kind of inside the letter or the parcel looks like it should be sanitised, they should do so.
Getcha. Okay. And then people, it's just a lovely idea of going back. It's a bit of nostalgia, telling people about themselves, what they're doing during lockdown, what they're hoping to do after lockdown, residents talking about their families. It's just a lovely, and I'd imagine as well for the days that are so long now that visitation has stopped, this is a way for residents to kind of have a nice distraction.
Exactly. Yeah, no, and it's something for them to look forward to and getting to know someone new. And this is not really something I'm kind of thinking just for lockdown or COVID. Like, I'd really like for this to continue because I think it is great to kind of, you know, pen pals have always been a great thing. So I don't see why it should stop.
Okay, absolutely. Well, listen, the Insta page is called Pen Pal Project Ireland. But if you've got that many people now, are you actually actively looking for more or not?
Well, see, that's the thing. I'm not telling people to not sign up, but I don't want to disappoint anyone either. So what I'm doing is I'm trying to encourage as many nursing homes in Ireland to get in contact with me so that I can pair as many people up as possible. It may not be straight away. It may be in a few weeks' time.
Gotcha.
But I do hope to kind of try pair everyone up.
Okay. So we want nursing homes around the country who may be listening to this, who think this could be a lovely thing for any of their residents, to get in touch with you. The Insta page is Pen Pal Project Ireland. And also, can they email you either, Sinead?
Yes. The thing I'd actually, for the nursing homes, if they could actually email me on info@blissfulweddingdecor.ie. It's my business email, but I want to keep the nursing home separate, just as there's so many people signing up at the moment. I don't want to miss from the nursing homes. So
Brilliant.
That would be fantastic.
Blissful Wedding Decor. Let's give your business a plug as well.
Oh, thanks a million.
And please God, you'll be back up and running next year doing the things that you do best as well. But Stacey, this is brilliant. I think it's a lovely idea. Fair play to you. And I think you're going to make a lot of people very happy by it.
Oh, thank you very much.
Nice chatting to you.
Bye. Bye-bye.
Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Yes, the text is 51551, or you can email ray@rte.ie. We were chatting at the top of the show there about a 4-day week, and somebody has texted in, I'm a farmer and I do work long hours sometimes, but I don't do 24/7, 365. Can't do it. I take lots of breaks and holidays every year, this year being an exception. Then I was getting you to send in some of your lockdown books, something that's maybe given you a lift that could inspire somebody listening today. Jer in Athlone Joan says, The Wonder by Emma Donoghue is an amazing book. It's a page turner from beginning to end. I love her, I have to say. Love Emma Donoghue. Eleanor Oliphant is Completely Fine by Gail Honeyman. Yes, that comes in from Joyce. One of my favourite books. I just love it. So full of character. It's brilliant. The Good Mother by Sinead Marathi. Fantastic author. And that comes in from Yvonne in Wexford. And Moira says, Catherine, I read What is Beautiful in the Sky by Michael Harding. Oh, sure. Look at everything that Michael Harding writes is fabulous. The book was lovely, absolutely lovely. So there you go. Keep them coming in. 51551 or ray@rte.ie. Now, earlier in the year, we met Anne Brophy as part of Operation Transformation Keeping Well Apart. Anne was living and cocooning in her apartment in Santry in Dublin when I first got chatting to her, and we unleashed her onto the world. And she was just brilliant. She kept us entertained. I would think it's fair to say she kept us calm. She kept it very real, and I think kept things in perspective as well for people who were cocooning, and was just very honest about the stresses and strains and how difficult some days were for her. And Anne got in touch last week to give us an update on how things are going. And unfortunately, there has been some bad news. Anne, how are you? And I never really associate you with bad news, to be honest.
Well, listen, I don't either, Catherine.
I know.
How are you? I'm actually grand. I just have news, you know.
I know. But listen, you did get bad news. Let's just get it out there.
I did. Yeah, absolutely. Well, in around September, I had found I thought I had a lump under my arm, actually, if I'm honest, during the programme.
Okay.
And I was like, because I was losing a bit of weight, and I was like, not at all, it's just fat. But anyway, long story short, found a lump, found a few other bits and pieces, went to the doctor, and I have cancer. So I have had, I've had two surgeries in 6 weeks. So I had a partial mastectomy with lymph node removal, and then they came back for the rest of it. So that was on the 9th of October. And I'm sort of waiting now on all the results and a regime, or I suppose a timetable really for the chemo. So
okay.
All that result will be out on Thursday. So, yeah. So that's my news. I'm like Raquel Welch on one side and Twiggy on the other. Does anybody out there interested in that? Let me know.
I mean, this is it. When I texted you earlier, I just said, you know, and you did say you're a half glass full woman. You always have been. And how are you feeling? But you must have gotten an awful shock, Anne.
Well, I did. But, you know, it's very interesting. Like, as you know, I'm a very independent person. I live on my own and everything else. So I knew for a long time, I had nearly 6 weeks waiting on. I had all the tests done and I hadn't told anybody at all. And then I sort of got an inkling that, you know, well, not an inkling, I was told, you know, there is definitely something happening. So, yeah, so then I knew I had to tell people. So I actually found it more difficult telling people than actually me being told, because you feel like you're, you know, I don't know, you feel like you're in a dream and you're like, oh, God, I got to wake up in a minute, and these people have gone, oh, typical Aunt, so dramatic, you know.
And do you know what, Anne? I think there'd be a lot of people thinking, and me included, because there was, I think the people were slightly confused as to were screenings happening, because we know much didn't happen during lockdown, and people not presenting as well to their GPs or whatever.
Exactly.
Did you know to go straight in, or how did that happen for you?
Well, I actually, believe it or not, like, I'd gone back to work and everything else, and I had noticed, as I said, the arm part for quite a while. And then I started noticing a puckering on my boob rather than a lump as such, you know. And of course, in this day and age, what do you do when you Google it? And I thought, oh, Jesus, that could be something. So I was in work one day and my feet were swelling, and I thought, you know, I'm going to make an appointment to go and see the doctor. So when I went to see the doctor, I said, listen, would you have a look at this while you're at it, you know, that sort of thing. Not really thinking that it was anything, and yet, you know, I don't know, there was something there that made me feel it was, you know. So I have to tell you, within less than 2 weeks, I got a text to say, you have an appointment with a breast cancer surgeon, and I kept looking at the text going, is that saying a breast cancer surgery? What the hell's going on here, you know? And then I saw him, Mr. Allen's name, he's fantastic. Within a week of that, I had a mammogram and the biopsy and all the other bits and pieces.
And what was it like, Anne, walking in and that first moment for you? Did you go in on your own?
Oh, yeah, I did all of it on my own, really, until the very, very last, when it was suggested to me that I should bring somebody with me, you know.
Yeah, because I know you have a big family. I know you're one of 10, you were one of 11, and you're so close to your brother, Ian, as well.
Yes, that's right, yeah, absolutely. Ian and Mary, his wife, you know, and my sister in England.
And your nieces.
Very close. And all my nieces, yeah, I mean, two nieces, particularly Jodie and Lisa, you know, but like all of them, Stephanie, Lynn, John, the whole lot of them, like they're all great, you know, Stacey's down in Waterford, and they were all texting, you know, oh, how's everything? And I'm like, great, yeah, not a bother, you know, and I'm like, shit, how am I going to tell them
all? And you didn't tell them at that point, did you, until you'd gone
in? No, I didn't say anything to anybody. I actually had got the diagnosis, and it was only when I was told... Well, actually, I was told the date for my surgery almost from the get-go.
Okay.
Once they established that there was something.
Okay.
And they said, you will be going in on the 11th of September. And of course, here I am. Oh, 9-11, typical of me. I couldn't just go in an ordinary day, you know. But anyway, so I didn't tell anybody. So about a week later, I'd had a bone scan and I'd had a whole load of other bits and pieces done. And then I realised, you know what, I'm going to have to tell people because I'm going into hospital now and they are going to do a partial mastectomy. Initially, it was a lumpectomy, but then at that point, they knew it wasn't going to be, you know. But like, Boneland are brilliant because they have a system. You go through the tent, your temperature is taken, you go up and you wait in another area where everybody's social distance, and then you're called down to the clinics. The clinics are a lot smaller than they were. All of that is fine. Actually, the weirdest thing is when you're going to have surgery. That's the weirdest part.
Yeah.
Because you go in and so you go to admissions. Yes. Okay, great. Go downstairs, take the lift down, go down to the lower basement area, go to this area and you go in and literally you're like there's no beds or anything, just a little chair, your green socks are put on you, your wage, your strips, your whatever. And then you literally have to follow this person down to the operation theatre and you're like, well, maybe me, you know, I was like, sweet Jesus, like, you know, it's like an Auschwitz or something. Where am I going? But I had fallen the week before, so I had an awful pain. So I started limping. So they were all getting ahead of me, and I was like, I don't know where I'm going, and they're running off ahead of me.
So
every few minutes they were stopping and looking back, you know. But we're all in our gowns and our masks and everything, and like people are going by, going to X-ray and doing whatever. And
it must be surreal. It just must be surreal.
It's very surreal. And you walk in, and of course, what happened to me, which was wonderful for me, this nurse says to me, I called her the traffic warden because she was directing traffic in this area, and she said, "We'll put you in this bed now, Anne." And she said, "We were here last week," and I said, "No, I wasn't. No," and she says, "All right, up you get." And I get up in the bed and I said, by the way, you can't touch this arm because I was having the lymph node thing, they couldn't take blood pressure or anything. And she says, "I know where I know you from." And I nearly passed, like, because she's going to savage me. She says, "You're from Operation Transformation, keeping well apart, aren't you?" I was like, "Yeah, I am, yeah."
Oh, God.
Well, the laugh then, and that took over everything. Because we have a celebrity, lads. And then one of the doctors, I was saying to him, "What are you doing there? You're like creeping Jesus. Move over here, everyone's talking to me."
To be honest, I don't think I've ever interviewed anybody and laughed when they're talking about their breast cancer surgery.
Come here. The poor fellas, they were all standing around waiting on Mr. Allen to come and have a look at me, you know. So and they were all standing around. They were starting, you could see with them, they were a bit nervous. I said, "Asher, look, we have to get this show going, you know." So we had a great crack. And but they like needed to say, the smile was right off my face when I woke up.
I know. So come here, one boob, you've had one mastectomy done.
Completely.
And then...
Yeah.
You're keeping your fingers crossed. We're all keeping our fingers crossed for Thursday. That's when the pathology results are in, and that's when
that's
they look at how
right.
they're going to manage
and
it. Okay.
How they're going to manage it and what they're going to do. And to be honest with you, you know, I don't really mind. I've sort of psyched myself into this phase, you know. I got the hair cut really short the last day of lockdown. I said, right, I have to get this done. So I got the hair short and shaved and at the back. And I said, right, at least that way, if I start losing my hair through the chemo, I won't have a lot to lose. Do you know what I mean? Because I did have long hair. So I'm also doing, you know, just things. I got nice new perfume and, you know, little things like that. Just to put myself in the right frame of mind. Now, I have to say this lockdown really did floor me. And I was like, I'd love to know the gender balance of the people who are making these decisions, because I guarantee you there's not enough women in there. A woman wouldn't shut down a hairdresser's and say that's not essential service or a beauty salon or a coffee shop.
Bastard. Oh, listen. Oh,
sorry. I forgot it's on the radio. Sorry.
I was thinking about you actually when the last lockdown was lifted, just the amount of coffee mornings, the amount of coffee meetups you would have done, and then for it all to go back again.
No idea.
But you know what, Anne? I have to say, right, if there is somebody listening out there today who has found something that you did, because this is, I mean, it is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and for early detection is so crucial and so critical, and you need to move in the way. Like, I think people like you, you go, oh, will I won't it, but you knew you had to go and put it out there.
I absolutely knew, and I said to myself, look, you know, because even the doctor said, you know, like everything moved so fast, but at one point I wanted to put the brakes on it so I could have time to breathe and think about it. But you can't afford to do that. You have to get on with it, and you have to go and get the treatment. And, you know, they're fabulous in the hospital. I have a breast cancer nurse called Jer. She's just wonderful. She sees me. If the doctor's not available, I will see one of his registrars, and then I might see Jer as well. Do you know, and they just take care of everything for you.
And
you
how
know,
do you
they
feel?
Really do.
How do you feel? Where is your head at, having had one breast removed, and you know, getting used to that and getting used to your new body?
Yeah.
Like, is it just you need to get cured and that's where the head is at, or how is that sitting with you?
No, absolutely not. Like, the first surgery, believe it or not, was actually the most difficult, and that's because it was a partial mastectomy with the lymph nodes, but I had an awful lot of issues after it, and not least of which were compounded by the fact that I had this fall in the apartment the week before, about a week before the thing. But and because I live on my own, you know, so you're only in hospital for a very, very small amount of time because they don't want you staying there and getting infected, you know. And I did find one night, I just woke up, I was in an awful lot of pain. I went into the bathroom and the mirror, I just caught sight of myself in the mirror and I just fell apart. I absolutely fell apart. I was like, oh my God. And this was only with the partial, you know. And what am I going to do? And it didn't look too bad, but it was just, it all overwhelmed me at that point. Going in for the second surgery, I sort of just didn't know what I was going to look like, and nor did I think about that. But that actually, the radicalness of it is certainly very, it's very disconcerting. You know, you look in the mirror and you definitely see this, like as if you were a child again, is how I would describe it. You know, and then I had many tears about trying to get dressed to go out, because when I had drains in, I couldn't wear a bra. So even though I had one boob, I felt I was going out naked. And even for hospital visits or, you know, people were very good to me. Daniel, who I work with in New Jason Farm, he came out to take me out on a coffee morning out to Newbridge, drove me out, and, you know, they had lovely coffee for me, and all my friends were there. Everybody I work with was there, and it was just great. But I cried so much before I left the house, because trying to figure out what to put on me so that I didn't look like a freak, you know, and that's very, very difficult. And it still is difficult, you know. I would spend a lot of time now, if I'm going out, just trying to, you know, layer up, and maybe I always wore scarves, and now I'm much more into like looking for the scarf and making sure I have a pashmini or something on me, you know.
And I think that's it, certainly, you know, from friends of mine, it's like it takes a while to just figure out how you are going to feel your best, and it takes a little while. And there are lots of different options for when you're ready, whether it is reconstruction or whether it's prosthetics or whatever.
But even at the moment now, and this is how quickly they work, at the moment I am waiting on my prescription for my prosthesis has gone in, and for a new bra and all of that. Now, it will take a little while, but also at the moment, because there's still I'm still sort of bandaging or strap, whatever you call it, on the wound, they won't, like, I wouldn't be able to handle a prosthesis at the moment, is what I'm trying to say. But, like, all of that is in motion, and that will all happen quite soon, you know? So it's like everything. There are a huge amount of services out there, but I would say it's also a very lonely transition, because you have to go through it yourself. No matter what people say to you, no matter how great they are, and everybody's wonderful, you have to go through this yourself, and you have to get your mind in the right space. Do you know? It's very, very easy, and it would have been very easy for me to sit back and go, oh, that's it, I'm done, and I'm crying and whatever, especially the days when I was very down and I was very sick, you know. But me being me, I knew you have to put this aside and stop this nonsense. And so I did. The other side of that is, sometimes I push myself too far, and then I suffer first, you know. But
and I think that with you, and from what I know of you, it would be, you know, you'd want to kind of keep the glass half full, as you said, keep out there, keep trying to do things, keep, you know, get out while you can and all that. But with a surgery as big as this, you need to. And I mean, trying to tell you to sit down for any more time after having you sat down since March is difficult, and I get it. But listen, I know, but you need to mind yourself. Listen,
I do. Definitely, absolutely, and you know what? It is good also to get out and have a little walk and do those things. But you know, I just hope in a way that this lockdown is not as prolonged. I do think myself that it's, you know, I said this before, people's mental health is as important as the economy. And, you know, it's very hard. When I got my diagnosis, the only thing I wanted was to sit down, have a cup of coffee, and just sort of just breathe for a while. And I couldn't, because there was nowhere that I could go. And at that time, the coffee shops weren't back. Well, they were back, but very limited service. And we couldn't go anywhere. We couldn't get in anywhere.
Let's hope we get through the next couple of weeks.
I could
sit here and talk to you for the next hour and a half.
I'll give you a call
after the show. No, think, not at all.
I keep thinking that I'm just having a chat with you. I keep forgetting.
I think your message, Anne, you are an absolute legend. I love you to bits. I think... I know it's hard. I love the fact that you're putting the brave face on, and I love the fact that you're looking at this from a positive perspective. We are keeping fingers crossed for you for Thursday. And just to say as well, the Breast Check programme resumed nationally today, which is Tuesday 27th of October. And just for people to know that as well. Anne Brophy, over and out. I love you so much. Thank you so much for coming
you
on.
You too,
and
Catherine.
Mind yourself. Take
you're
it easy.
So good. Mind yourself. Bye. Bye-bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, author, podcaster and brand new mother Caroline Forne joins us on the line now to chat about the reality of those newborn days versus the expectation. Caroline, it is lovely to chat to you.
Catherine, thank you so much for having me.
Listen, I was looking at your gorgeous, gorgeous little boy, Kaelin, on Instagram. And I'm pronouncing it right, haven't I, Kaelin?
He's
10 weeks. I won't lie, the ovaries did a little somersault. I was just like, that is the cutest.
He's absolutely gorgeous. I know I'm probably biased, but he is very, very criminally cute,
He is. How are you feeling? How are you doing 10 weeks in?
I'm doing much better now. I think for the first few weeks I was inside out, upside down. I didn't know what. I feel like I keep saying to people, I knew that I was pregnant, but nobody told me that I was going to have a baby at the end of it. And I feel a lot better now. The hormones and everything have settled down. I've had obviously 10 weeks to kind of adjust. And I feel mad even saying that, because this is something people, women do all day, every day, all over the world. And here I am saying it like it's a big deal, but I didn't realize how big a deal it actually is for you as an individual when you've never done it before.
And when you go through it for the first time, nobody, I think, can prepare you for it. It is the biggest deal, and it is the biggest deal in your whole world when you're going through it for the first time. And I did that as well, going, well, millions of women have done this for centuries. But when it's your first time, there's nothing that can prepare you for it. And I suppose, like, people will know you from your work. You've got two best-selling books, Owning It and The Confidence Kit. You have been so profoundly brilliant in your honesty over the years, talking about anxiety, not just with the books, with the podcast as well, and really coming at it from an angle of somebody who's not a professional, just like, this is my experience, this is what's happened to me. So with your pregnancy, you know, how did you manage with your anxiety and the build up to giving birth? You said you kind of didn't really think about becoming a mom, but how did you manage in the kind of the 9 months?
I actually found, from an anxiety perspective, I was quite okay in pregnancy, apart from morning sickness really crippled me. I found that very, very difficult. But I was kind of, I was so, you know, when you're in the thick of it, I had nothing, I could do nothing but just get on with it at that point. And then for me, the big event was giving birth. And I just thought, if I can get through that, I can, no matter, like, whatever about what happens next. And people would say to me, oh, the fourth trimester, that's, you know, that's a real thing. And I was like, yeah, yeah, whatever. Once I have the baby, I'm home and dry and with my baby at home and my husband, and I'll be fine. So for me, the big anticipation was the labor. And I remember when I was in labor, feeling so oddly calm because I was so proud of myself that I was there and I was doing it. And this was something that I was scared, you know, every woman is scared of going into labor because, you know, there's so many variables, so many different ways it can go. Obviously, you hope for the best. And I was very fortunate that I had a very, very good labor. It was a very nice, positive experience for me, apart from the fact that I was, you know, it was in COVID and I didn't have my partner with me for until I actually was ready to push. He wasn't able to come in. So that was a bit distressing. But that was kind of where the anxiety for me, I thought, was going to stop, but really wasn't until I was left on my own in the hospital room with a tiny baby and no partner, and the hormones that just start to flood out of your body after all that pregnancy, that's really when the kind of postnatal anxiety hit me. And I was so frightened because I thought there was something so wrong with me, because why wasn't I feeling this incredible love, blissful bubble that everyone talks about? That's all I saw on Instagram. And I was like, I'm a monster, or what? There's something fundamentally wrong here.
Because what did you feel?
I felt incredibly terrified. I felt also pressure that this pressure probably coming from myself more than anything, but I was expecting to literally have the baby come out and I would feel, people say, like, I love like nothing you've ever felt before. And it took me a while to feel that. I was really intimidated by the whole thing. I felt like I didn't have a, you know, everyone feels like they don't have a clue what to do, but everyone says the love will just take over and get you through. And I was like, I don't feel it yet. Or I felt like I had to get to know the baby. Thankfully now, I mean, I'm surprised he has any cheeks left. I've kissed them off so much, but it took me a while to get there. So between the feeling, the anxiety about not having an instant connection, the anxiety about not knowing what to do and having this massive responsibility suddenly thrust upon you. And for me, it was very much a physical anxiety. So the hormones, I was pumping sweat. I had all these shakes and stuff. I didn't realize all these things could happen, from like the epidural would make you, you know, they pump so much liquid into you to keep you going. And then it has to all come out. So for me, I was literally drowning in sweat for weeks afterwards. And I was on Instagram saying, is this just me? And everyone was like, no, actually me too. But again, I had no idea. So then I was having all these shivers and things, and I thought that was an infection, had to go back into hospital. I was fine, apart from the fact that I was just really shell-shocked, and hormonally it was going to take a couple of weeks for that adjustment to settle down. And I guess maybe with my predisposition towards anxiety, I thought, oh God, this means something so much worse. And I just couldn't believe that I'd get to a point where I wouldn't feel that kind of untethered. And it's kind of mad, really, if you think about it, that we go through labor, we go through something that's, you know, hours on end, quite a massive ordeal for your body physically. And then you just get handed a tiny baby to go home. You don't get to recover or have any rest. So it's huge.
I remember standing, bawling my eyes out when we had Ellie up on the car seat, up on the kitchen table. And we'd come out of the hospital and we'd gone at nighttime and got home, put her on the kitchen table, and I just looked and I felt no connection, and I felt it was so alien to see her sitting there, because kind of in the hospital, because you're in that environment and there's so much to do and you're trying to feed and you're trying to sleep and there's nurses around and everyone's trying to help you out. And I went through days of really wanting people there and then not wanting people there. And I really feel for women who are delivering their babies now, like what you had to go through without your partner there a lot of the time, because you don't know when you need people and you don't know when you don't. But getting home,
exactly.
I remember sitting, like standing there crying, going, and I'd had it a couple of times in the hospital where I was like, oh, she doesn't feel like mine. Like it doesn't feel like my, what? And then I'd have like these hour surges of complete and utter love, but then it would go again. And I remember just watching her on the kitchen table going, it doesn't feel like I have a connection here. And it's really weird to see her
and
here.
And that's a horrible feeling because that goes against what society tells you you're supposed to feel. And people say to you, oh, are you just so in love? And you're like, oh, yeah, I am. And then you're like, what's wrong with me? You know, I feel like a monster or something. Or am I not maternal enough? Am I not cut out for this? And I guess I just felt like everything was compounded, because not only was I feeling this way physically and hormonally and emotionally and everything, but I felt like no one else felt this way, because all I saw on Instagram was, you know, girls going off for their brunch and their beautiful walks with the baby within a matter of days of coming home from hospital. And if, of course, it's everyone, you know, it's up to yourself if you want to put out the best bits on Instagram or if you want to keep it real. But I guess I had this idea of what early motherhood would be like. That's why I thought once you have the baby, that's it. You're you know, you're done. It's just the best thing ever then. And I just was so like, holy crap, like, sorry, I didn't mean to curse.
No, you're good. We've just had Anne Brophy on before you. You're fine.
Actually, I heard that. I was like, oh, woman after my own heart. But that's why I kind of started. I didn't consciously decide to start sharing, I guess, the reality of parenthood. I've always just shared. I've always shared everything for me. And people always, you know, say, oh, it's great that you do that because you normalize it for other people. But not only, I mean, the byproduct of me doing that is that I normalize it for other people who feel the same. But for me sharing, you know, the anxieties or me sharing the fact that I'm sitting there crying, feeling like I'm inside out and upside down, that's a coping mechanism for me as much as anything else, because I need to have other people reflect back to me that it's okay to feel that way.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's the thing. Like, when you're sharing the good, the bad and the ugly on social media, it's like, no more than you've talked before, and I've heard you on so many of your podcasts, which I love, and I've heard you chatting with Sheila Shoghi, and it's like this imposter syndrome. And I think sometimes you never feel more imposter syndrome than when you become a new mom, certainly for me, that you have those days and those moments where you feel that you're not able and you feel that you're not good enough.
I know. The imposter syndrome, it really gets amplified, and the self-doubt gets amplified so much when you're a first-time mum, I think. I mean, I just keep, no matter what's wrong with him, I keep going back to blaming myself. But if I've learned anything through all of my work and all the books and the podcasts about imposter syndrome, and I really think I've cracked it, it's that when you are willing to kind of close the gap on how you view yourself privately and with what you put out to the world, and when you own your vulnerability, the imposter syndrome kind of dissolves away.
Yes.
And I find that really powerful for me now. Like, I you know, I don't feel like an imposter because I am vulnerable. I don't know what I'm doing half the time. I'm finding it overwhelming. I'm finding it hard to adjust. But I know that I'll get there. And I know now that I've put that out there to the world and I've had countless messages. I mean, I've had massive connections with women I've never met from different corners of the world because of this. I know that it's really common. And I just hope that anyone who's, you know, going to have a baby now, especially in COVID times, knows that it's completely okay if you feel, you know, really lost at sea in those first couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And you also, I thought that was great as well, that you were very honest that you stopped breastfeeding and you felt like that you kind of just needed to get that off your chest. Excuse the pun.
Yeah. I know. The breastfeeding is, I guess, until you are a mother, you don't realise what a contentious issue it can be. People have very strong opinions about it. But I just, because I was already sharing, you know, everything anyway, I thought it would probably be disingenuous of me to not, I probably couldn't get away with not saying it because I share so much of my life, I suppose, on Instagram. But I also wanted some reassurance, I guess, and I wanted other women who made the decision to either not breastfeed at all or just to switch over to formula. I wanted them to feel like it was okay. And for me, I don't know whether... Sometimes I have these thoughts now where obviously you've got the mom guilt and I think maybe did I give up too soon or anything. But really at the time, I only did it for a week, but I was so not okay. I wasn't getting any of the bonding feeling from it. And I was so stressed out and anxious that I just thought that it would be so much better for me to share the feeding with my partner and to take a little bit of myself back. And I know this probably a lot of people out there who wouldn't agree with that, but I really think and I really believe that the mother's mental health is just as important as the baby's well-being as well, because you can't, like they say, you can't pour from an empty cup, and I can't bond with him if I'm stressed out and crying my eyes out. Like, so now I have a much nicer experience feeding him, and you know, he's really happy little baby, and I've had so many women say to me, you know, thanking me for sharing that. Now I've also had women say to me, because he's had like problems with his digestion and stuff, so I've had a few people, not many, but some people say, well, you never would have had any of those problems if you had kept breastfeeding, and you know, all that kind of stuff. Obviously when you put yourself out there, you have to expect an amount of that, but I just think no matter what you do, everyone's doing their best for their baby, and whatever's right for you is the right thing, and that's all you can do.
You
really
do you. That's what I keep coming back to all the time. You do you. And listen, I think it's just, I love what you do. I love how you use Instagram in the way that is the right way, which is just be nothing but yourself. We wish you the best of luck going forward, Caroline. Lovely to
thank
chat you to
you
so today.
Thanks,
and give
Catherine.
Kaylin a big squeeze from me. Nice chat to you.
Thank
Take
you.
It easy.
Bye.
Anish Toshe and I'm the Priyavsh Gaelton, the Nuuk, the Lakot, the Valas. Garamagot Koch, lots of texts coming in here for Anne. Hi, please tell Anne to wear a sports bra with adjustable straps. It will keep her remaining boob in place. I had a mastectomy 2 years ago and I found the sports bras very uncomfortable. Good luck to her. Tell her losing the hair is not that bad. It will grow back, says Siobhan. Lucy says, Catherine, tell Anne I had a right side mastectomy in 2009. It is hard at first to get used to your mirror image, but I promise you it will be fine. It's a bit upsetting when they give you the first soft prosthesis, but again, you get past that too, and it gives you shape so you get happy and it makes going out easier. Very best to you, Anne, for the future. Loads more coming in there, and I'll try and get to a few more of them before the end of the show. But now it is time for our quiz of the day. Yes, I did mention this at the top of the show. The fabulous prize on offer today comes courtesy of our friends at Farnham Estate in Cavan. So the winner today is going to enjoy a two-night stay for two people in a stylish room with breakfast each morning and dinner for two in Maxwell's Grill Room. It is located in a magnificent estate with 1,300 acres of woods and lakes, 90 minutes from Dublin. Fabulous, full of charm and character. And you guys can look at farnhamestate.ie for more details. But one of the people that could be winning that today is the is Bridget Daly. Bridget, are you on the line?
I am indeed, Catherine. Good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon. How are you doing this fine afternoon?
I'm doing good.
Good. Where are you today?
I'm in Fallon's in County Kildare.
Lovely. And what are you at for the afternoon?
I was doing some knitting there earlier and I had done a barn break this morning. I just want to get into the swing of things for Halloween.
God, that's very organised of you. What are you knitting?
I'm knitting a jumper for a friend's child.
Lovely.
Lovely. Back into the knitting.
I have to say, when I had Ellie, there's a friend of mine who knits, and it was the greatest. They were the loveliest presents to get because they were so full of thought and so personal.
They're really lovely now. The knitting is very important and very popular again.
And therapeutic at a time like now.
Oh yeah. What else do you want to do?
So you're knitting away. Who else is in the house with you?
My husband Jim.
Okay.
And my daughter Elizabeth, she's working from home, so she'd be upstairs in the bedroom there.
Okay.
And doing what she does.
Has the house gotten small at any time in the last week?
The house has just changed so much since early in the year. I couldn't say I noticed anything different in the last week or two, but it's just life has been so different this year since March. That's it.
And how are you, you know, in terms of missing meeting up with the grandchildren? And you actually, was your daughter meant to get married?
Yeah, she was to be getting married. Barbara was to be getting married the coming Saturday. Herself and John were to be getting married. So back in March anyway, they decided to cancel their wedding until next year. So
okay.
We have another year to wait and look forward and all that.
And yeah, look, that's the way to look at it. Look forward to it, get excited about it. And, you know, we all need something to look forward to, and that's a great one. You've three daughters, is that right? One of them is living at home with you.
Well, she's here. She's working from home at the minute, yeah.
Oh, so you haven't extended the invite to be a long-term invite there, have you?
Oh, no. I'd be all right now. Just myself and himself would be absolutely all right on our own.
Well, listen, Bridget, today we are lovely chatting to you. Yvonne Mulligan is also on the line. How are you, Yvonne?
I'm really good, thanks.
Good. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Castleknock.
Lovely. And what is going on for you today? What are you up to?
Well, I'm actually was just about to do some scones. I'm furloughed, so I was going to do some scones, and then I heard the competition, and then I just abandoned those.
The scones can wait.
Yeah.
What did you used to do, Yvonne? Difficult time.
We're on the PUP payment. I work for an event company, so we're out of work since March. So okay. I'm delighted to get a chance to win a weekend away or a couple of nights away.
If I were you, I'd be entering every competition that I can to win anything.
I've been trying.
Good woman. Well, listen, hopefully now you'll have a good run at this as well as Bridget. We wish you the best of luck. So I'm going to start with you, Bridget.
Okay.
Player one. You've probably been listening in, but if you can answer this question correctly, it is 1 point. Are you ready? Both ready to go, ladies?
Yeah, good luck, Yvonne.
Good luck, Bridget.
Lovely. Okay. Bridget, this question is for you. Today in 1275, the city of Amsterdam was founded. Amsterdam is the capital city of which European country?
The Netherlands.
Is the right answer. Well done, Bridget. Yvonne, I'm coming to you. Today in 1955, the Argentine peso was devalued. What is the capital city of Argentina?
Buenos Aires.
Is right. Fabulous city. One of my favourites. Love it. Okay, Bridget, I'm going to ask you to take a listen to this. So on this day in 1988, that film was first released on home video with over 14 million copies pre-sold. Can you name the film?
E.T.
is the right answer. We won't say that we heard anyone shouting in the background there on that one.
No, actually, I knew it anyway.
Good woman, good woman. All right, Yvonne, over to you. This is your audio clip. Take a listen.
You punts in here expecting to be hand-weighted on hand and foot while I'm trying to run a hotel here. Have you any idea of how much there is to do? Do you ever think of that?
Oh, love it. On this day in 1939, that English actor and comedian was born in Somerset. Can you name him?
John Cleese.
Is the right answer, Yvonne. Well done. Okay, Bridget, back to you. That's two all. Today in 1992, Great Britain issues a postage stamp on the 100th anniversary of the birth of the author of Lord of the Rings. Can you name him?
Tolkien.
Is the right answer. J.R.R. Tolkien, well done to you. That's 3 points to you, Bridget. Back to you, Yvonne. Can you give the surname of the Welsh poet born on this day in 1914? His most famous poem was A Child's Christmas in Wales and his first name was Dylan.
Thomas.
Is the right answer. What a fabulous surname, I have to say. Three points each, guys. Back to you, Bridget. Have a listen to this.
Oh, God.
What a tune. On this day in 1975, that rock star appeared on the covers of both Time and Newsweek. Can you name him?
I certainly can't. It's Bruce Springsteen.
Did you watch him on The Late Late?
I did. Oh. I did. And I actually went to see him years ago down in Tormund.
Oh, so I was at that gig as well.
There you go.
What a performer. He still has it, doesn't he, Bridget?
Oh, Jesus.
He does. On spades, honestly. Anyway, right, back to the quiz. Yvonne, this is your audio clip. Take a listen. All right, Yvonne, today in 1958, Simon Le Bon, singer with that band, was born in England. Can you name the band?
Duran Duran.
Yes. All right, ladies, we are on 4 points each. Bridget, coming to you. On this day in 1987, which Asian country, whose capital is Seoul, voted overwhelmingly for a new constitution?
Korea. Wait, no.
I need a little bit more than that.
I know, geez, I'm just trying to think which one is it. Not Korea. South Korea.
Quick, Bridget, need an answer.
South Korea.
What?
South Korea.
Is the right answer. She's just in now by the skin of your teeth, Bridget.
I know,
All right. Okay, Yvonne, you need to get this right to stay in the game, all right? On this day in 1982, which Asian country announced its population has reached 1 billion people?
India.
Is the wrong answer, Yvonne. Oh, I'm sorry. It was actually China. I am sorry. It was a toughie, though, I have to say. Well done. But it is back to the scones for you, Yvonne. And we're going to send you a Ray D'Arcy Show mug that you can have the cup of tea with the scones. And I'm sure they're going to be fabulous scones as well. Thanks a million for playing today, Yvonne.
Okay, thanks.
Nice chatting to you. Bridget, you are today's winner. I doubt there'll be any more knitting done today or any more barn
break. I'm going to go back to it now.
That is
the diamonds will be curled in a different direction.
Exactly. You know, you'll have to take a day off today. But who are you going to bring to the Farnham estate in Cavan?
Oh, I don't know. I'll have to decide on that at another time, I think.
Jeez, clearly your husband isn't there looking at you, is he?
He is, actually.
Well, you never know. They have to behave themselves now and look after you for the next couple of days.
Yeah.
And then
I
you
think
can...
now I'll have to put a few other names in the hat.
Listen, I'm delighted for you. Well done. Absolutely thrilled.
Thanks a million, Catherine. I'm delighted with it too.
And listen, best of luck to all of you and best of luck with the wedding next year as well.
Thanks very much indeed.
Mind yourself.
That.
Take care.
Okay, cheers. Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Welcome back. A couple of people texting in here about that interview with Caroline as well. Love that interview with Caroline. It's exactly what I experienced 18 years ago. I was so terrified to admit that I didn't feel like a mom or bonded with my baby. Thank you for that. Lots of book texts coming in here as well. I can't put down Mary McAleese's book. Well worth a read on the background to her life pre, during and post presidency. Says Michal in Blanchardstown and Roscommon. Any book by Lucinda Riley, just finished Midnight Rose, brilliant story, halfway through Graham Norton's latest. I read about one book a week, says Marie. I'm halfway through Liz Nugent's Our Little Cruelties. That's next on my list, I have to say, actually. What a brilliant read. I can't put it down. I'm actually going to have to compile all these texts and get a book club list going for myself. Two Beauties, says Gerard Kelly. Secret Flowers by Donal Ryan and Break the Mold by the inspirational Sinead Burke. Lots more coming in. But you know what? Let's get a little bit of music. That is Gavin James and that is the remix by Mark McCabe there. I think that is pretty cool. All right. Summer may be over, but there is still plenty of growth outside and we're going to talk about foraging and what you can make from the free food that grows all around us. Terry McCoy is on the line and Terry is a chef and author of St. Patrick's Plate, which is food inspired by our patron saint, which involves foraging. Terry, great to chat to you. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
Good. I am looking at this book here and I've actually been flicking through it during the song. My mouth is watering. The photography is brilliant. It's absolutely beautiful. And I love the front cover, which I actually think you could be a dead ringer for St. Patrick yourself.
Yeah.
Come here. For people who don't know, what is foraging?
Well, foraging is going out into the countryside and using a bit of common sense, but looking at everything that's growing there. Mm. And there's quite a number of things. Like at the moment now, the blackberry bushes are absolutely laden with fruit. And it's just such a lovely thing to teach children to do, to go and pick the berries and they can eat the odd one. And hopefully you'll get a few in a bowl and you might be able to make some blackberry jam from it, which is very easy and very good and full of vitamin C. Something else that's on the bushes now. You probably remember in May and June the elderflowers, the white flowers that were on the bushes.
Yeah.
Now they've all turned to berries now, and the elderberry is packed with vitamin C, and it's lovely to make a syrup from it at this time of the year if you collect the berries by using a fork to strain the berries off. The stalks are not good. You don't need the stalks, but the berries themselves are excellent, and you make a lovely syrup to put over some ice cream or custard or anything like that. And it's full of vitamin C and very important for the immune system.
Mm. You can also make wine out of elderberries as well, can't you?
You can indeed. I remember my father doing it, where I got a lot of these tips from. And of course, he had it under the stairs and there was a big explosion one night. It blew up the bottle and the syrup was stuck everywhere and you could smell it for years afterwards. But yes, you can. But the fermentation process is tricky, you know. But we have better equipment now to be able to let the gas out of the bottle. So you can, yes.
And I think, with blackberries and crab apples and apples and all those things, they're kind of pretty straightforward. I mean, I think we've forgotten to go looking for them and how in abundance they are everywhere in hedgerows and on the side of roads.
Yes.
But I think maybe what people, there's lots of stuff that we don't know about, I suppose. And if we're going looking for, say, mushrooms, for example, I don't even know, like, how many different types of mushrooms are growing in Ireland?
Well,
There's
40, Catherine.
Is there?
There's six of them are edible and the rest could possibly kill you or make you rather ill.
And you see, I think this is the problem. People are a little nervous with foraging because whether it's plants or nettles
or
whatever.
Well, there's loads of books on them. There's one particularly good book is a book by Richard Mabey, and he's several different editions of it. Food for Free, Richard Mabey.
Mm-hmm.
And it's available on Amazon and all those, because I was looking at it. I have a copy myself. But he'll tell you all about the various mushrooms you can have.
Mm.
But there's a few different copies of that.
Okay.
So you can get simple ones and more involved ones.
And I suppose that's the thing. If you're going out picking, if there's something you like, put it in your basket or put it in, and then research it before you put
yes.
it into anything when you get
yes.
home.
Yes, exactly. But we're very fortunate here in Skerry, so we can go foraging down onto the seashore too and get seaweeds like Caribbean
moss. Lots of seaweed,
see,
yes.
Like there's a sea salad that might, you know, it has a lot of different varieties that you can harvest, and sea spaghetti, which we would know it as the bootlace seaweed. But that can be made like spaghetti. It's really good for you.
Mm-hmm. So, well, listen, you've sent us in some goodies here. I'm looking at the... during the break there, I buttered my brown bread.
Yes,
right, the lads went good. And got us some brown bread. And there's a beautiful jar of St. Patrick's Blackberry Jam, handmade by Terry McCoy. McCoy. And then there's apple plum... lemon
compote,
juice.
Yes.
Oh, so this is the compote. Okay,
yes.
Apple and plum compote.
Very
okay.
Wonderful on your porridge in the morning.
Okay, so I'm going to try the blackberry jam first. So do you want to give us, as I'm talking, what are the ingredients in
well,
it?
Well, the ingredients are just blackberries and sugar, but I add some carrageen moss. Now, a lot of people will know carrageen moss, but it's an ideal thickening agent. So we're trying to reduce the amount of sugar.
Sugar, okay.
We used to say if you had 500 grams of blackberries, you'd use 500 grams of sugar, and that's what you'd make. But now we can cut down to about 150 grams of sugar if we use a few sprigs of carrageen moss. It will help the blackberry jam set.
That is delicious.
And, of course, we don't have as much sugar in it then.
Mm. That is absolutely delicious. And
good.
When did you pick those blackberries?
About 10 days ago. The jam is made now about a week.
Okay. And where can yep. people get it, Terry?
Well, now, we're putting together a hamper
okay.
at the moment, and it's ideal for Christmas. You'll have a pot of the two jams. You'll have a copy of the book, which tells you how to forage, and it has over 60 recipes in it. There's a little bag of carrageen moss in it as well, which will teach you to get started, kind of reduce sugar. So it's an ideal gift for Christmas, and it's available on stpatricksplate.com, www.stpatricksplate.com.
And tell me, Terry, when you mentioned your father there, that you learnt a lot from him, so you've obviously been doing this for years.
I'm an elderly man now, yeah, I'm 75 years of age. But yes,
has
yes,
it always
of
been a big part? Because with,
it,
even
it
when
has.
You had the restaurant, you had the Red Bank in Skerry's there.
I had, yes.
So did
indeed.
You, a lot of your menu, did it come from
yes,
foraging?
Yes, from
okay.
the local. I'm very fortunate to live in Skerry's in North County Dublin. Of course, the land of North County Dublin is terrific for walking out into the countryside and foraging away. So we used to use a lot of the ingredients that I could pluck wild, like wild sea spinach and that. So always kind of inspired like that.
Mm.
Yeah.
And come here, do you
miss... I'd love to pass it on to the next generation. So that's why we've written
that's
the book.
That's why you're doing it.
Yeah.
Can I ask you, probably not now during everything that's going on with restaurateurs just and everybody in the hospitality industry just really up against it.
Yes.
Do you miss it? If it wasn't a pandemic, do you know what I mean? Do you
very much so, because like we're a very communicative bunch of people. We like talking to people in the restaurant business and the hospitality business. We're naturally, in Ireland, we're naturally gifted with it and the chat. Mm. And it's awful just what's happening at the moment. But the only thing I can hope to do is go out and into the countryside or along the seashore and get the fresh air in and do other things and make other things and try to come up with other ideas to kind of keep ourselves sane. But this was all inspired because when St. Patrick came back to Ireland, he came back across the Irish Sea and landed on an island off Skerry's called Church Island or Patrick's Island. And he had to forage and eat. And, you know, we've found lists of food back in the 5th century that the Roman soldiers had over in Britain. And really, this is what St. Patrick would have had available to him. There were no shops or supermarkets, so he had to go foraging along the shore. And apparently he lived to over 70, so he was very healthy. He ate very well, and he had loads of energy to traverse Ireland with no highways or byways. In those days, he would have had to walk his whole way. So I'm very strong on trying to use natural whole foods as much as possible and try to get away from the industrialised processed foods that
you
we
know
have,
what, even
as much as we can.
Just even for families now with the midterm, you know, because we're all trying to get out and walk. But I was chatting to a friend of mine last night, and she said, "Geez, if I have to go for another walk with the kids, I'm dragging them out of the house now." But at least when you think about doing something like this, it's actually very interesting for them. If you,
it is.
They have pictures, they have to go and find it. You could actually make it quite fun for kids as well.
You can, yes, indeed. But the whole thing is to take a look over the gate of the field, make sure there's no bull in it, or anything like that. And do remember that the farmers own the land, so have some respect for the land while you're in the field, and to close the gate again.
Close the gate
but
after.
But they have no problem. They're changing their attitude now, and it's very, very welcoming.
Very
and
quickly.
It's a wonderful thing to do to teach children.
Very quickly, the apple and plum compote. I have put it on brown bread because I didn't have porridge. I'm going to take a mouthful of it now. And do you want to tell us how you made that one?
Well, that's simply we picked the apples in Donabate from a friend's orchard. And the plums, he had a plum tree there as well. And that was in late September. And we just mixed the apples and plums together with an equal quantity of water to the fruit and about half that weight in sugar, and just some carrageen moss again, a good few strands of carrageen moss.
Lovely and spices just, in that.
Yes, there's some nutmeg and there's some cinnamon as well.
Beautiful. I would eat that on brown bread all day long. I love it.
The brown bread is very good, though. It's the recipes are all in the book, www.stpatricksplate, that will be included in the hamper.
It's a gorgeous book, Terry.
Yes.
And fair play. And the hamper, when it arrived up to the desk, it's presented beautifully. So again,
good.
As you said, lovely present. So fair play to you. Well done. And lovely chatting to you today.
Great. Thank you, Catherine. And good luck.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Terry. That was Terry McCoy there. And all of the details of his book will be on our website. That's all from me today. Cormac and Sarah are next on Drive Time. Have a lovely afternoon, guys.